welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. In so much of our discussion and attention to immigration in this country, immigrants themselves are often reduced to pretty crude stereotypes. They're cast as bad actors, people who want something they haven't earned, who won't respect the laws of our nation, and who maybe want to take things from people who are born here in order to get them for themselves. A big part of why that's true, of course, is because we don't really get to hear a lot from immigrants themselves, particularly those who are undocumented, about what their lives are like, what their journey to this country entailed. They often live among a smaller group of people, only those they can trust, only people with whom they can truly share their stories. And it's quite infrequent that they've literally written down the narratives that include their moments of vulnerability, moments baked with fear and shame and the unknown. Undocumented immigrants often live as outcasts, often literally and metaphorically in the shadows of our culture. Xian Julie Wang is someone who has written about her experience with a lot of detail and openness. As someone who was an undocumented immigrant from China to the U.S., her new memoir is called Beautiful Country. And in it, she explores transition, identity, and what it's like to be a child trying to understand social boundaries when everything is so unfamiliar and you're told that there are so few people you can trust. Xian Julie's story is also really unusual and interesting in the sense that she has had so much success in our country. Once really poor, she's now a prominent attorney and author and has been grappling with what the American dream is and what it should be. I'm really pleased to have Xian Julie Wang with us today to discuss all of this on Detroit Today. Xian Julie, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephen. Delighted to be here.
So before we get to your story here in America, talk about what life was like for you in China and what people's perspectives were in that country of the United States. You come here as a fairly young child, but you were old enough, I think, to remember what was before.
For me as a child, my memories of China are of joy and warmth, of being surrounded by my loved ones and my family members. But I also remember my father in particular coming home from work, strained, exhausted. He was a professor of literature. He had also grown up in a dissident household, and his whole family had been persecuted by something because of something that his brother had written. And he also had come from a long line of dissident writers. So there were many days when my father would come back frustrated at what he was not allowed to teach his students through literature and politics and looking at society with clear eyes. And over time, it became so dire what he was trying to teach in the classroom and the censorship that was leveled at teachers and professors that my parents decided that he should leave. And my father was gone for 2 years in America while my mother and I remained in China. And those years were marked by a sense of sadness and loneliness that I had never known. Of course, that changed even further once my mother and I joined my father in Brooklyn.
And talk about that journey. What brings you to the country as an undocumented immigrant? And what do you find here when you get here?
So my mother and I arrived on visitor visas. My parents knew nobody in the country, in the continent. Very quickly, we lost our visa status and slipped into undocumented status. And in China, before we left, people had very different conceptions of what America might be. Some thought the streets would be paved with gold, there would be plentiful food everywhere, and others thought that it would be full of violence and crime and poverty. And what I found very quickly as a young child was that both versions existed in some form. At the same time that I could look up in the sky and see the Brooklyn Bridge and the sparkling skyscrapers, I was also looking around me in Chinatown and in Brooklyn and seeing people who were hungry, just like me. I went to school hungry. Every day we had about $20 of food for a week for the three of us. My mother and I worked in a sweatshop. My mother was also a professor. She had been on the forefront of developing computer science technology. And to see my accomplished mother sitting next to me at the sweatshop snipping thread and attaching labels for cents per article of clothing, it completely changed my entire worldview. I had never been aware of hunger. I had never been aware of documents. I was only 7 years old. And here I was realizing that there was a world of people who lived very differently from the privileged life I had come to know in China.
Yeah. I wonder if you were aware at that point, at that age, of the sacrifice that your parents were making and had made in order to get to this country. You talk about, your mom working in a sweatshop when she'd been a professor back in China. And was it evident to you that they were sacrificing for something better, that being in America was the right choice for not just them, but also for you, and that these hardships were just kind of a necessary part of the bargain?
Not in such clear terms. I was very unclear as to why we had chosen this version of life. Mm-hmm. And times I had said, why don't we just go back? I don't understand why we're here. I miss my dolls. I miss my grandparents. I miss my uncles. And my father would often say, I know the day-to-day is hard right now, but here we have freedom. And here you can one day be whatever you want to be. There will be no limits on that. And it would take me many decades to unravel the meaning of those sentences and really grapple with the gravity of what he had faced and the choice that he made for all of us.
Yeah. You describe much of this early time in America as essentially being in the shadows, that there was a lot of mistrust and secrecy that surrounded your life. Can you talk about what that was like in Brooklyn?
Being undocumented means that there is a secret at the center of your life that you must guard at all costs. No one must ever know about it. And by virtue of that, you can't ever let anyone get too close. Because if they got too close and saw, you know, that you were living in a tenement style home shared with many other immigrants, if they saw that, you know, your mother was crying at night and you went to school hungry, they might start to question what's going on. Why are you living in these circumstances, especially with such educated parents? And for me, it instilled this deep sense of shame, right? Some truth at my core was not to be known by anyone, lest I be deported. And there was this sense that I was almost subhuman or lesser because of our status. And because of this, it caused me to hold people at arm's length, even, you know, longer past that status. Because once that shame is baked into your core, and I think a lot of us can remember a time in our childhood when we learned to keep our first secret about ourselves, and then quickly realize that there was something to be ashamed of, something to hide about ourselves. That stays with us long into adulthood. And so from early on, I just learned to keep friends at arm's length. And once you lie about one thing, what's the difference between lying about another thing? And maybe if I lie about more things, this one thing that I have to lie about is less burdensome, it's less shameful. And so I just concocted these versions of myself. And there was only one space where I was safe to be my full self. And that was in the sanctity of that one room that I shared with my parents. And then through, you know, I couldn't tell my friends the truth, but I could open up a library book and whisper to the babysitter's club that I was undocumented and that was safe. And so there were little circles that I carved out where I could be honest. But in the bulk of my day, in the bulk of my life, I had to maintain lies. And over time, it became part of who I was.
Yeah. You mentioned there the babysitter's club and other stories that you found in the library, which I think is a wonderful part of your tale, because I think so many of us find the world in the public library when we're kids. We grow up in one place or in one space, and these stories take us to all of these other really great places that maybe we'll grow up to visit or experience, or maybe we won't. Maybe they're just fantasy. But talk a little about what you found in the library and how you found it.
My goodness, I remember just feeling like this lost child wandering through the desert, because my whole family was on the other side of the world and I had no idea when I would ever see them again. And I uncovered this local library, Chatham Square Library on East Broadway in Chinatown, just a block away from my elementary school. And the first time I went in, it felt like the whole world opened up before me. Here were all of these books that I could read and borrow and enjoy all for free. I had never known of such a thing. And here were all the lands and types of Americans that I had yet to meet. You know, I saw on TV that most of America was suburbs and people drove cars and they had big green lawns and white picket fences. I didn't see that in very urban Brooklyn and Manhattan. And so by opening up the Babysitter's Club or Sweet Valley High, I was able to learn, oh, this is what it's like to be an American kid in this part of the country. And most of all, I faced this intense need to learn English, learn to speak English as perfectly as possible, not only because of the persistent stereotype that all Asians are new immigrants and therefore cannot speak English, but also because so long as I did not speak English perfectly, I would be marked out as a new immigrant, and that might draw suspicion about my immigration status. Mm. So by throwing myself into these books, working my way up to Clifford the Big Red Dog, Hungry Caterpillar, through Amelia Bedelia, and then finally Hatchet and Charlotte's Web and Babysitter's Club and Where the Red Fern Grows, that had me crying for weeks. I was able to feel like I could sound like and talk like a real American. And that gave me a sense of belonging and community that I really longed for, but it also gave me the sense of safety that I could camouflage into America and not risk deportation for me and my parents.
Yeah. I'm talking with Chien Julie Wong, an attorney and author whose memoir is Beautiful Country. It is about what it's like to come to America, to be undocumented, to grow up in America and become a success despite that background, the things that she experienced, the things that her family experienced as immigrants to this country. We want to hear from you during the conversation as well. Are you an immigrant to this country? What has your experience been like? What have been your struggles or your successes? And what does the American dream actually mean to you? We talk about immigration and immigration reform as policy matters all the time on this show. We don't talk as frequently about the people at the center of those policy imperatives, immigrants themselves, especially undocumented immigrants who often, of course, are fearful about talking about their experience and what they have gone through. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. And as I said, we want to hear all kinds of stories of immigration, both those that are maybe sad or tragic, but also those that are really successful. Of course, Southeast Michigan is kind of a huge melting pot of immigrants from all over the world. It's one of the things that makes this region so culturally rich and interesting. We want to hear some of those stories during this conversation. She and Julie, I want to talk now about what happens when your mom falls ill here. It seems to me that when you have, as you say, a secret at the center of your life, every day is just about kind of hanging on to that secret, hanging on to your status to be able to exist in this country. And then if something else happens, if something else piles onto that, it's exponentially more disruptive than it would be for families who are not facing that first challenge. So talk about the way in which your mom's illness affected your family and how it affected your father as he had to go forward from that moment, still leading your family in this country.
Yeah, we, of course, did not have any health insurance or access to medical care. By virtue of being undocumented, your job almost every day is to stay invisible, lest figures of authorities spot you and figure out what's going on. And so when my mother first became sick, we were quite unsure as to what to do. And we found some what we called underground doctors who themselves were undocumented, but had been doctors in their countries of origin. And this was kind of a safety network for patients to receive medical care and for the doctors to be able to continue to practice despite the barriers of immigration policy. But of course, those doctors didn't have formal offices. They didn't have machines. They didn't have the support network that would often help you diagnose quickly and well. And for this reason, my mother's illness kind of dragged on, and we weren't actually sure as to what was wrong. We thought she just had a stomach ache, but it got progressively worse until she couldn't walk. And eventually, I came home to find her just rolling around in bed and telling me to call 911, which of course was the number we were never to call. The cops should come to our home. But the fact that she was telling me this told me as a young child that something was very, very wrong. And she was taken to the hospital. She had to undergo surgery for, she had a severe gallbladder stones that ended up encroaching on her liver. So it was an extensive surgery that she had to wait for, particularly because we didn't have money or insurance. And the toll of even just going to the hospital to visit her every day, My father wore that on his face. He wore it on his shoulders. So again, you know, he grew up a dissident child. His brother had been thrown into prison. He saw his parents beaten and chastised and publicly humiliated every day of his childhood. And this threat of walking into the hospital and seeing police officers all around the lobby, seeing officials, you know, investigating matters, because often in the hospitals there were victims of crimes, and having to walk past that, knowing that he was an inch away from being caught and returned to the land where he was persecuted or being persecuted here, was a triggering of a deep trauma that I did not appreciate or understand until much later in my life. And, you know, in the course of undocumented life, of living this reality, I saw him start to shrink into this shadow of a person that I knew. He was so joyful. The version of my father that I knew was joyful and hilarious and full of life and over the time of our years here, I saw him shrink in and just become more and more invisible, as he was commanded to do. And so this toll weighed on my father as he continued to work and try to support me and take care of my mother. And it really brought both of my parents, I think, to the psychological precipice, this breaking point of how much longer can we endure this? And is the long-term gain really that worthwhile?
Wow. Wow. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Xian Julie Wong about her book, Beautiful Country, and about immigration and the journey that immigrants travel to not just come to our country, but to become part of our nation. We're going to get to you on the phones and on social. Jesus in Detroit, Mark in Redford Township, who will be up next. If you want to join them on the phones, we absolutely want to hear from more of you about your journey to America and what that was like, the successes, the struggles. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we could include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest today is Xian Julie Wong. She's an attorney and an author of a memoir titled Beautiful Country. It is about her journey from China to the United States and her journey once she gets here from an impoverished background in Brooklyn to being a successful attorney and author. We're talking about immigration today, and not from a policy perspective, the way we normally discuss it on the show, but from the perspective of an immigrant herself, somebody who's had this experience and can share what it's like. We want to hear from other folks about their journeys to this country, journeys that were maybe full of success or beset by struggles. We also would love to hear if you are a descendant of someone who came to this country. Did you hear these stories from your parents, from your grandparents, about what it was like to pick up from where they were and to come to try to be Americans? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can try to include you in the conversation that way. Before we go to our callers, Xian Julie, I want to talk about what ultimately happens to your family. You end up in Canada, and tell us what happens after that.
Yes, I think my greatest privilege was that I was born to educated parents, and given my parents' desperation, they eventually figured out a way to get us to legal status, and it became clear to them that the fastest way to do so was to leave the country and find home somewhere else. Once we arrived in Canada, it was like the switch had been unflipped. Right, by virtue of crossing this border, the central problems of our lives disappeared. And we no longer had to hide. We had access to dental care, to health care. My parents could get fully fledged jobs without being worried about documentation. And, you know, immediately our response was, okay, we're fine now, right? We're lucky. We're the lucky ones. We made it out. We're fine. And it would take me much, much longer to understand the depths of the psychological pain that had been seared into all three of us for so many decades after that. Actually, until my book came out, my parents and I never talked about being undocumented. We never talked about those years. And yet even for years, into our lives in Canada, I was never able to eat a full meal without feeling like I had to throw up immediately because my stomach had shrank to such a small size that it could not accommodate a normal amount of food. And as I was pushing through these waves of nausea after lunch at school or after dinner, I would just tell myself, I'm fine. You know, I'm lucky. I'm out. This is normal. And the fact that my body would take years to recover suggested all the more that my heart, my mind would take that much more time and attention to come back from an existence that really no human should be in.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. We're going to start with Jesus today in Detroit. Jesus, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen. Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller. Really appreciate you having me on.
Very good.
I heard your comment earlier about sharing stories of joy as well and success. And I know that, you know, as an immigrant myself, I was born in Mexico and raised in Southwest Detroit. Stories of immigrants are generally tragic, unfortunately, but there are stories of joy and success, and I thought I'd share mine. I came to the city as a kid with my mom. She was undocumented, came with my brother and sister, and despite her not having a husband, despite her having three kids, you know, English, no citizenship, she became a successful business owner, and to this day, her travel agency is still thriving in Southwest Detroit, and we're all doing well. And, I think there's a resilience and a grit about being a Detroiter, and a resilience and a grit about being an immigrant. And when you're a Detroiter and an immigrant, that resilience and that grit is just unbreakable. So I'm happy to share that story of joy and of success, despite all the hardship.
Yeah. Jesus, that's a wonderful story. And I'm really glad you called and shared it, because as you point out, a lot of times those stories aren't about joy and success. And of course, in Southwest, which is one of the places where we have lots of immigrants from Mexico and other Latin American countries, there are, of course, lots of stories of struggle with being undocumented and trying to establish yourselves here. So I'm really glad you shared that. She and Julie, that's the flip side of the immigration story, is that there are some people who can figure it out without as much hardship as your parents had. There's something that is unequal and imbalanced about that, I feel. The reason that one family is able to come to this country and another is not is often kind of murky.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I would say that the ability to endure those struggles, I would argue that most immigrant families face some version of hardship, actually provides a source of that grit, right? Looking back, whenever I had encountered any difficulty as an adult, I would look back and say, well, I survived those years. There's nothing I can't do. And my father chose his life and for me. And so why not do this and that and really put my mind to it? That source of determination, that fire in our belly, comes from having seen early on what our parents underwent. But yes, I would say there is an inequity in how immigrants fare here, in part because of where they land when they first arrive, their networks and community. The community of immigrants around them is crucial. The access to public resources, the safety that one feels in seeking out public resources, right? Those are issues that our politicians and community leaders should be looking at closely, because there should not be such a disparity, right? Our country should not be what is known as the beautiful country across the world in one part, but scarcely beautiful elsewhere.
Yeah. So I want to go back to your parents and their decision to come here. They were both professionals. They were both academics. What was it that prevented them from being able to get permanent residency here and then become citizens? As you say, you come on visas and those visas expire. What was the reason that they were unable to translate those into residency?
My parents did not know anybody here. I think that was the number one barrier. Mm-hmm. There was a natural inhibitor to being honest with their networks, right? You can't just call some random person up and say, hey, I'm facing my visa expiration, or hey, I'm undocumented, what do I do? Because that entails trust. that entails putting your family safety and on the line. And so what I didn't know as a child, but I subsequently learned, was that my parents did seek out various lawyers around Chinatown, gave them a lot of money to us, at least at the time. And they would return to these law offices, so-called, to find that those lawyers had disappeared and taken the money. And this is a scam and ruse that has been happening for the entire time that I've been in this country and continues to happen today. I actually litigated against a lawyer a few years ago who ended up being disbarred for repeatedly targeting immigrants and new immigrants in particular for the scam. And if you think about who is the most vulnerable, what is the population that is the easiest to target, but from the perspective of a lawyer and from with the authority of the law, undocumented immigrants and new immigrants are, I would think, at the very top of that. And from there, that experience, I think my parents stopped trusting lawyers, stopped trusting the system. They had no idea, even though there were legal options at that time. They thought, oh, these lawyers are just out for our money and not to actually assist us. And so again, I say, I mean, it was extremely fortunate for us that my mother was able to eventually make a friend who said, here, there's this other route that's still available to you, and talk to my lawyer, who I do trust. And that is the way I think that most immigrant families find their way, is to have that one person, that one friend, that contact who does believe in their future and who is willing to share that kind of information. That impermeability of access to legal resources and legal knowledge is, I believe, at the foundation of injustice and inequality in our country. And that's why I became a lawyer, and my father actually became an immigration lawyer and practices now in Chinatown, in the very location where he lost a lot of money to various lawyers.
Wow. Again, Jesus, really appreciate your story and your call to share it. Let's go next to Mark in Redford Township. Mark, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
I really applaud this conversation and your guests you're having this morning, because it ties into my own research on labor and immigration studies. I'm a labor and immigration historian, and if you think about the immigrant's experience, it's to be thought of as a contour of life study, and it's to be respected in light of that, so that, you know, their life course comes to fruition and they're able to be successful,
mm-hmm.
As your guest was. And it's very unfortunate that her parents were not as successful because of obstacles. But this idea of respecting it as a contour, this idea of respecting it as a contour of life study is essential. And I really applaud the guest that you have, because you put a face to these issues that you talked about in the past.
Yeah. Mark, I really appreciate your perspective as a labor historian and somebody who's really thought about the immigration and what it does. Shan Julie, I wonder if you can talk about the transformation about how you feel about being an immigrant, how you feel about being American, how you feel about the things that your family had to go through to get to the place that it is now. I imagine that it looks a little different perhaps than it did when you were 7 and came here, but I guess I'm wondering how different.
Yeah, when I arrived, I really bought into this idea of the American dream, the idea that is sold to many of us, and the idea that my father harbored. Growing up in the dissident household, he would read by candlelight the works of Mark Twain and F. Scott Fitzgerald. And growing up, he would imagine this other world, right, called America, where anything was possible and anyone could achieve anything. And I held on to this dream. When we had no choice but to move to Canada, there was this deep anger inside me of, how could you take my father's lifelong dream away from him? And I was determined to fight my way back here and prove him right. And ironically, it wasn't until I had achieved the highest privileges in this land, I would say. You know, I became a citizen in 2016, 22 years after I first moved here.
Wow.
I've been a lawyer for many years at that time. I'd gone to a top law school. I've been practicing at a very high level, clerked for a very high judge. It wasn't until I stepped into that realm of American life that this duality of the versions of myself, right? One, this child who kind of scampered like a rat and cockroach whenever she saw anyone in a police or firefighter uniform, even a sanitation worker, lest she be detected and deported. And this woman who went to these fancy offices and stood up in the courtroom and wore expensive suits. How is it possible that these two people both exist inside me? And why was that necessary? I started really examining and deconstructing this version of the American dream, which necessarily suggests that immigrants come to this country at the bottom of the economic totem pole, at the social totem pole, and climb their way up against the systemic barriers. And what that leaves certainly me with, but a lot of the fellow immigrants that I've been privileged to meet and know, is this sense of survivor's guilt, right? Because you're acutely aware of the communities and the people who maybe didn't make it as far as you, who are still daily struggling with hunger and with fear and with invisibility. And what do you do with that? What do you as one individual do with that? On top of that, you're carrying the traumas of you yourself kind of making it through this world without that network, without necessarily a community of people who understand what you went through. When I went to Yale Law School, I realized I was just in a different world. And yeah, there were actually several students who had gone through what I had gone through, but by and large, there were students who had no idea what it was like to live that kind of life. There were professors who had zero idea. And what does that leave you, right? With that sense of shame that you grew up with at the center of your being. Where do you put that? How do you process it? And I'm fortunate because I got to a place of privilege where I could afford therapists. I could go into therapy several days a week. I could start to process and unpack everything that my parents and I carried and find a way to not just survive and endure and make it day to day, which I think a lot of our immigrant parents, a lot of that last generation are still in the survival mode, and find a way to thrive and make meaning of those experiences, of channeling those experiences into what I do every day to try to contribute to some sense of growing equality for immigrants. But that's not everyone's story,
yeah.
Right? And I have to be aware of that, that there are people who I grow up with who don't get to live this life. And what do I do about that? I get to find the answer.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Shian Julie Wang about her book, Beautiful Country. Also want to continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number here. Give us a call. Tell us about your story of coming to America. What was it like? Was it a successful story? Was it a story of struggle? Maybe there were stories of tragedy. Did you hear stories like that from your parents or your grandparents who came to America? Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us, and we can work you into the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest today is Shian Julie Wang. She's a civil rights litigator and author of Beautiful Country, a memoir about her life as an undocumented immigrant. We're talking about immigration with her, her story, but also the stories that we share here, especially in Southeast Michigan, a place that attracts immigrants from all over the globe. We want to hear about yours. Call and tell us about your family's story, your family's journey to this country. Did it happen when you were a child? Did it happen before you were born and you just heard about how your family came to this country? Give us a sense of what the challenges were to coming to this country or adapting to being here once you were here. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. She and Julie, I also want to talk just a little about immigration policy with you and the things that that you see in your work as a litigator that kind of cry out for change. As I said before, we talk about immigration a lot on our show and about immigration reform and the need to really fundamentally change the way we think about this. But you see it every day, and you experience other people's journeys and the difficulties every day. So give me a sense of where you think we can be doing better with immigration policy, making it easier for people who just want to come here to become Americans, able to do so.
Yeah, I think number one is visibility and consideration of immigrants and undocumented immigrants in our general policy. So when COVID struck and many relief packages were offered, noticeable to me and many people in the immigrant community was that very few were open to immigrants, whether documented or not. Mm. And this is a consideration, I think, that's just invisible in a lot of our discussions, that where we talk about food insecurity, housing insecurity, the need to supplement income, the need to make sure that children who can't make it to school are still receiving the meals they need, the education they need, the software, the hardware that they need to attend school remotely. There's a big gap in our understanding of what it means to live as an immigrant, as a new immigrant, or as an undocumented immigrant. Those people are the most loath to come forward and say, hey, I need some more free meals. Hey, my child is hungry. My child is struggling, right? Their day-to-day goal, as I mentioned, was to stay hidden. And so it is incumbent on us as allies, as people who are advocates, to consider that and make sure that all of these packages incorporate some form of relief for that population, who are often frontline workers, who often do not secure the support they need. They pay taxes and they don't receive the benefits of our system. And so later on, as advocates and activists began to push, there did become available a package that was for which undocumented and documented immigrants were eligible. But that took a lot of time. That took a lot of loud voices and a lot of loud allies, of which I believe that we are in good company today among your listeners to fight for that change. Secondly, I think there has to be some permanent path to citizenship for the people who are stuck here, who have been undocumented here for decades, who are Americans, who maybe came here at age 2, or who came here, you know, at age 20 and have been contributing actively to American life, to making our country a better and more fruitful place for everyone for many decades. Those people deserve recognition under the law. They deserve an American green card or passport. And the DACA program, while well-meaning, and while it does offer some temporary relief, it does not cover all of those individuals, nor does it offer any sort of permanent safety. And particularly with how divided our country is right now, the constant back and forth of courts overruling DACA, of a new president coming on and striking down DACA through executive action, that just contributes to this sense of instability, of insecurity, and limbo that undocumented immigrants are already living under. It does not provide any certainty or stability that any human being would need to feel safe, both psychologically and physically. And so I would push everyone who is listening right now to call their representatives and follow up on the Biden administration's promise of building that permanent pathway, because these people are productive and contributing members of American society. They're not here to steal our jobs. If anything, they're taking the jobs that no one else wants. They're paying taxes and not getting any returns. And they are your neighbors. They are all around you, whether you know it or not. They're your cashier. They're your laundry worker. They might be a doctor or a lawyer kind of hiding in your midst. And they deserve that recognition of they, too, are American.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, the last three presidents have promised to find a way to get the comprehensive immigration reform that that we have needed for such a long time, and no one has been really successful at it. Of course, Donald Trump is something of an outlier in that group, because he wanted to push immigration in a really different direction. But we just have not been able to get to the things that these families need. I want to end with you talking about how you talk to your family today about your story and what your family makes of the transition from China to the United States. It's been a long time that you've now been here. How do they think of the choices that were made and the things that have happened since you got here?
I asked my dad this recently, whether he regretted anything. And he said if he had to do it 100 times over, he would come back to America 100 times over. He is the biggest patriot I know. To his mind, America can do no wrong. And this was even through, you know, COVID, the wave of anti-Asian hate and attacks that we endured in New York City in particular. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, America's just going through a tough time right now, but it will turn around. America at bottom is good, and it will do better, and it will continue to do better. His dream, I think, of seeing me create for myself what I want out of my life has in many ways come into fruition. But that was not, that was not without the struggle and hard work. And now we look back on those years and we just say how lucky and fortunate we were to have made it out, to have that perspective, to have found our way to a place of safety. And how it is our duty to pay it forward to the new immigrants who are arriving every day. And that, we think, is the American dream of this interconnectedness, of this recognition of humanity among all of us, the sense of community and strength. And that's all built really on a profound love of this country and what this country could be and has yet to become. I think in our connection and our work in the community, that's where America can really become beautiful. And that's what we endeavor to do every day.
Well, what about your family back in China? You talked about as a child being really anxious about the distance that you had from them and whether you would ever see them again at certain points. How has that story resolved itself?
It's still difficult. I mean, we go back as often as we can, although with the pandemic, it's been extraordinarily difficult. And by virtue of being immigrant, I think it feels like yourself is split into two. There's a version of me that I am in China with my family and old friends. And there's a version of me here in America. And they say that you're more logical in your second language. I would say I'm probably more logical and contained in my second country. Mm. Because when I go back home to my country of birth, I feel this immense vulnerability that's kind of locked up in that country, this bittersweet joy and sadness of the childhood that could have been, the memories of Lunar New Year's that could have been created and that we never got to share, all the years that we lost. And unfortunately, that is just part and parcel of being an immigrant. You lose some of those profound central memories that could have been integral to who you are and to your childhood and the way you formed. But in exchange, we received a whole lot of freedom and independence and the self-determination that I think I would not have had access to had we stayed. And that is a trade-off I think that many, if not all, immigrant families make.
Yeah. Okay. The book is Beautiful Country, and the author is Xian Julie Wang. Xian Julie, it was really wonderful to have you here to talk about your family's journey, your journey, and of course, this new book. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for all you do. Take care.
Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Have a great weekend and come back Monday when we're going to talk with Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson about election safety and her reelection campaign for Secretary of State just a day before the November 8th midterm elections. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again on Monday.